Good afternoon. It's 2 o'clock, and this is the afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Come to order. Today is Wednesday, January 27th, 2010. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We have, unless there's council objection, we're actually going to defer item number 143 that we deferred from the morning agenda to the afternoon. We're going to defer it to next week's regular agenda. And our time certain is first reading of ordinances, item number 149. And can you please read the title?
Approve agreements between the City and Peregrine Sports, LLC, for the renovation and operation of PGE Park for use by Major League Soccer.
So Commissioner Leonard and I are going to say a few very brief openings.
Adams, before we start, do you want to move the amendments?
Yeah, I'm just going through the roll of, okay. I'm just going through what we're going to do. So we're going to say some brief opening remarks. Then we have some amendments that we're going to put into the record so that we're testifying on the amended documents. Then we're going to have our city staff team. We're going to hear from our private sector partners. And then we have two invited testifiers and then open it up to public testimony. Today, you only need to give your first and last name, no address, and you'll have 3 minutes, and that clock is on the front of that big piece of wood. We'll count down your three-minute time. So we're really glad that you're here. So a couple of brief opening remarks. Commissioner Leonard, do you want to start?
I would just shortly capsulize the last 18 months, which feels like 18 years, frankly, of discussions that have occurred between ourselves, Merritt, and his team as some of the most productive discussions I think I've ever been involved in since I've been in public service, given the agreement that we have. It didn't always look like it would end up that way, but with the assistance of, for both Mayor Adams and I, of our staff, Steve Janik, his colleagues, and with some hard work, we've developed a deal that I think is really unprecedented, not just in the city, but in American sports venues in general. And that being that we have produced a Major League Soccer deal that insulates the city's taxpayers and the general fund from any liability and produces for us guarantees by Merritt and his family that the rent at PGE Park will be paid for the next 25 years. While minimizing the risk to the city. That's kind of the technical 1,000-foot view, but I think the more important view, and I'm glad to see Tom Chamberlain, the president of the AFL-CIO in the audience, because the most important point of view from his perspective and mine is this creates jobs, and it creates jobs right away, and they're high-paying jobs due to the renovation of PGE Park that has to be completed before the first game in 2011. So for all the good that this does, sports fans, there's a lot of people right now that don't have a job that are eager for this vote to happen so they can get to work at PGE Park and make the modifications necessary and provide wages and benefits to their families. So thank you, Mayor Adams, for your diligent work on this and Merritt for your steadfast and hard work on this as well.
Well, I want to thank you, Commissioner Leonard. It has been quite a journey, and if you don't know it, it's always good to have Commissioner Leonard on your side of the negotiating table, the master negotiator, and I want to appreciate your great partnership and work on this. A couple of highlights of why we're pushing this, moving this forward for council consideration that haven't been discussed much before, but and so in some cases, reiterate, the Sounders set an MLS record last year for average attendance of 30,000 fans per game. It makes the Seattle Sounders one of the top 50 best-supported professional soccer teams in the world. We expect that kind of enthusiasm, a smaller city we are, but that kind of enthusiasm here in Soccer City, USA. We've got the Timbers Army. We've got thousands of youth soccer players and top-ranked collegiate soccer programs. It is the most popular sport in the world, and it cuts across racial, socioeconomic, and cultural barriers. It will strengthen our connection to not just our sister cities, but with cities around the globe. PG Park will also be a great asset for Portland State University with the opportunity for PSU football to move up to Division 1A, and this will create opportunities for increased revenue for PSU and position the football team to move into a top tier of college football. Commissioner Leonard talked about the construction jobs, and this is a ready-to-go project. I want to emphasize that we set goals above what are legally mandated for hiring women and minority-owned subcontractors, 30% for minority-owned contractors, 10% for women-owned contractors. To get this kind of private investment at this dire economic time for our nation is pretty amazing, and I want to thank Merritt Paulson and the Peregrine Group for their willingness to do this. The personal guarantees, regardless of what happens to Major League Soccer, the personal guarantees, regardless of what happens in terms of the assumed revenues, the fact that this protects the general fund, the fact that it does not compete with schools, it does not compete with basic services, makes this, as Commissioner Leonard mentioned, a remarkable deal. And to hear more about the details of the deal, I'd invite up the city team to walk us through some of the details. And as you're doing that, we've got three amendments. One is this piece of paper that should be in front of the city council. And I'd like, and then Commissioner Fritz has two. If it's okay with the council, I'd like to go ahead and vote on those to include them in the document, documents that the staff team will be presenting. So I would move this amendment. Is there a second?
Second. That's our amendment?
Correct.
Yeah, second.
Been moved and seconded. Discussion. There'll be more discussion as we go into the overall presentation. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Fritz?
And I'm assuming that the audience has copies of this to comment on it.
They're going to probably not, and they're going to go through the details of why we're doing it.
Okay, aye.
She said aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Commissioner Fritz?
I think this misunderstanding in the development agreement regarding the there's a proposed parking structure, and we had a discussion at council earlier this in this project where we agreed that the agreement was to consider building a parking facility nearby, but that we weren't committing to build the parking facility. However, the development agreement says on page 20 that the city will work with Peregrine et al. To develop a parking facility. So I move that it meet, that we say to consider developing a parking facility.
Thank you for that catch. Consider that a friendly amendment. Second?
Second.
Well, under discussion, I just want to get some feedback from our team. Does that create a problem?
I don't think so.
That's what we agreed to. I think it's a Scribner's error. Okay. Carla, can you please call the vote?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Mayor? Aye. Mayor, excuse me. Although you said friendly amendment,
we're voting on it anyway.
You voted on the first set of amendments that you introduced. This is a separate amendment, and I don't know that I heard a second.
Yeah, there's a second.
Okay, so I wouldn't call it a friendly amendment, just a regular vote.
This is a regular amendment.
All right.
Thank you, Shane.
You're welcome.
Where were we in the voting?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Third amendment.
And then my second point is something that is not in the development agreement, to my understanding, so we can discuss it next week or in the future, and that is regarding the source of funding for waiving the fees in the Bureau of Development Services, that whether, since the Bureau of Development Services is currently challenged by not having enough funding to cover the staff that are needed to look at permits, I'm wondering if that money is going to come from the general fund or if it could come from the spectator fund.
Commissioner, there's no plan to waive any fees.
Your
at
name
the,
is?
David Logston, Office of Management Finance. There's no plan to waive fees for development services. What was in the development agreement was a provision that for SDC charges, which we could not quantify at the point the budget was initially put together, that, and then there's a calculation that goes on within development services that quantifies SDC fees. If there was a savings in that, that if it came in under $350,000, that could be savings to the city that we would capture within the project budget. But there was never contemplated that we would waive development services fees, and in fact, they have been paying those fees all along as permits for survey work and those kinds of things have been taken out.
Great, thank you.
All right, so with two amendments under our belt, Mr. Janik.
Mr. Logsdon is going to go first.
Mr. Logsdon.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm David Logsdon with the Office of Management Finance. With me today is Steve Janik and Dina Alexander, the city's outside legal counsels on this project. Mr. Janik and Ms. Alexander will provide an overview of the agreements before you today, following my very brief remarks. Calendar item 149 is a non-emergency ordinance approving a series of agreements for the renovation and operation of PG Park for Major League Soccer team. I want to focus my remarks on the public goals and key principles that have guided the work of the city team on this project. Work on this project began in earnest in November of 2008 with the appointment of a citizens task force. And as part of that process, the City Council provided a set of guiding principles that included financial, social, and environmental goals. And the key ones were a provision that no existing or planned city programs or projects would be cut to fund the project, and to the extent possible, the revenues from the MLS enterprise would be used to fund the project. A good neighbor agreement would be required. The city and the project proponent would find ways to benefit youth sports and activities. The city requirements for minority women and emerging small businesses and the workforce training would be met, and the project would achieve a LEED Silver certification. This Citizens Task Force issued its report in March of 2009 and strongly endorsed the project. The task force made recommendations that expanded on the city's guiding principles as follows. The project should pose no risk to the city's basic services, that city revenues from Major League Soccer should be guaranteed so to minimize any risks associated with public bonds that would be issued for the project, that the proponents should provide private capital for the project, the city should be protected from cost overruns, and the city should continue the fair wage policy. The city team has worked hard over the past year to deliver a project that meets these policy goals and principles. And now Mr. Janik will provide you a summary of those agreements.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. The transaction documents that I'm going to talk about were negotiated by your city negotiating team, which consists of Mayor Adams and Skip Newberry, Randy Leonard, Ty Kovach, Ken Rust, Dave Logsdon, Mark Molina, the city attorney's office, my partner Dean Alexander, and myself. These documents are successors to two prior council actions. The council in July of 2009 adopted an ordinance that approved what we called the pre-development agreement. And in addition to that, the council in July 2009 also adopted by resolution the broad outlines of the business terms of the transaction. These documents are consistent with those prior council actions. If the council approves these documents, what we will anticipate is that actual foundation construction work and piling work will occur in the month of February and March, and then construction will cease and baseball will resume playing in PG Park, and then after the baseball season, construction will then resume in September with a targeted completion date by the first week of April 2011, the commencement of the MLS soccer season. The big picture financing plan for this project is the following. A budget as approved by your term sheet of $31 million, contributions from Peregrine totaling $19.1 million, contributions from the city totaling $11.9 million. Of the city's $11.9 million, there are basically two sources of funds here. We have spectator facility funds, primarily coming in from the Rose Garden, and then we have what we call the annual license payment that will come from Major League Soccer playing in the stadium. And in addition to that, there is a share of ticket revenue that the city gets, which is 7% which is greater than the share of ticket revenue in the Rose Garden. Now, what's interesting is the city will get 7 years worth of payments from Peregrine, and against that, the city will sell bonds to cover its contribution. But as has been noted before by the mayor, those 7 years of payments will be personally guaranteed, guaranteed first by Peregrine, obviously, but beyond that, guaranteed by Merritt Paulson and his father, Hank Paulson, the former Secretary of the Treasury. There will be no general fund dollars used in this transaction, and we have worked very hard to deal with the what-ifs down the road to make sure that there would not be exposure to the general fund. Now, the deal is complicated. There are 9 major documents that govern the conversion of PG Park to an MLS stadium and then the operations of that stadium for 25 years. They are the redevelopment agreement. There's an operating agreement. There's a project completion guarantee. There's a revenue stream guarantee, an exclusive use and guarantee agreement, a project funding agreement, and then an amended and restated MAC easement agreement. I will try to go through what I think are the most significant points in those. Obviously, I would welcome any questions, and I don't want to get too detailed given the number of people who like to testify. Let's start with the redevelopment agreement. The redevelopment agreement provides that the city must review and approve all of the design and construction documents, not just in its regulatory capacity, which is normal, but in what we call your proprietary capacity as the owner of the stadium. So you have all the regular review processes plus more. Your ability is to review each of the sets of construction and design documents as they evolve over time. In addition, you have to approve the general contractor and the subcontractors that have more than $100,000 worth of work to make sure that you are comfortable with the people that are doing the work. The redevelopment agreement, again, requires the contribution by Peregrine of its $19.1 million and the city's $11.9. And with respect to the possibility of cost overruns, the city has no liability for cost overruns. The risk of cost overruns is entirely on Peregrine and its guarantors. In addition to that, Peregrine and Turner have agreed to comply with the city's contracting requirements for important matters like women and minority and emerging small businesses, workforce training and hiring, equal opportunity employment, and the public improvement contract provisions that are in state law in ORS Chapter 279. In addition, Portland State University will be able to play its football games there. The redevelopment agreement requires a new good neighbor agreement with 2 affected neighborhoods. This is something we did in the case of the original PG Park. This is now updated, and those 2 neighborhoods have approved that. It's required that the building achieve LEED Silver certification for existing buildings, operation, and maintenance. In addition to that, Peregrine is required to provide its employees an opportunity to meet and to discuss labor organization without management there. In addition, we know we have a venerable sewer line, Tanner Creek, that goes through the park, and we are impressed with its longevity, and we hope to continue that. Therefore, the redevelopment agreement has requirements established by BES that are carefully designed to make sure that during the course of construction, there won't be damage to that line. And finally, the project budget on the redevelopment agreement includes 2% for art. Now, after these documents are signed and approved and effective, they will become effective 30 days from passage of the ordinance, assuming that occurs next week. Then within a few days after that 30 days, there will be an event called a closing, at which time the parties will be obligated to go forward and fulfill their obligations. In order for the city to be obligated, even after passing these documents, there are a number of conditions that have to be met to the city's satisfaction. And that would be the triggering conditions to your obligation to close. And I'm just giving you some examples here. We would have to approve the next iteration of documents, which are called the 100% design development documents. We would have to approve the contractor's phase 1 guaranteed maximum price. There would have to be an executed agreement with Major League Soccer called an expansion agreement, under which Peregrine is given the right by Major League Soccer to obtain a franchise. And the city has to be satisfied that Peregrine will be able to achieve a franchise under that agreement. Now, the timing of the issuance of the franchise we had hoped that that would occur contemporaneous with our closing. The current Major League Expansion Agreement provides that Peregrine will make its first payment at the time of our closing, but the franchise will not actually be issued formally until January 2011. The mayor has introduced amendments which we have negotiated once we learned that there may be some delay. We've negotiated these amendments to give the city even greater protection to protect against any risk that the franchise would not be issued. However, the recent update is it looks like the franchise will in fact be issued at the same time as our closing. The agreement currently has some conditions to the issuance of the franchise. They are normal, such as MLS still exists, the stadium is there, Peregrine still exists and hasn't gone bankrupt. But we have tried very, very hard to cover even those risks, and the amendments deal with that. Now, you've heard some discussion about a really innovative part of this project, which is Providence Hospital building a clinic, a sports medicine and related therapeutic clinic that would be, in effect, part of the stadium at the southeast corner where the access road begins to come down. This is not a completed transaction. The clinic will be open to the public, also will provide services to the professional soccer team. We have negotiated with Peregrine that all of the cost of this is going to be borne by Peregrine and Providence. None of the city dollars will be invested in this. Secondly, all the operating expenses, the ongoing costs of this, will also be borne by Peregrine and Providence. The agreement between Peregrine and Providence has yet to be completed, but when it is, it will be subject to your approval. That agreement will have to come back to the council for you to take a look at. And one of the questions I heard from some council members or staff was, how do we control if Providence leaves, who goes in there? And the answer is that we will deal with that rock solid when we review that agreement. So that's not in front of you yet because it's not done yet, but we will be coming back with that. In addition to that, as the council requested, we have obtained the approval of Peregrine and Providence that the clinic facility will serve patients insured by Medicare, Medicaid, and the Oregon Health Plan. Now, the next document I'd like to focus on is called the Project Completion Agreement. There's always the risk when you have an entity building something that it may not get completed. Why? A contractor goes bankrupt, dispute between builder and contractor, other possibilities. We have dealt with that risk by getting not only Peregrine to agree under all circumstances to complete construction, but we've gotten the personal guarantees on that of Merritt Paulson and his father, Hank Paulson, subject to a maximum exposure financially to them of another $20 million over and above what they're already putting in. Then we have another document which is called the Project Funding Agreement. And this, if you read anything, don't read this because it's probably the most technical. And basically what it says is, okay, we're ready to close. We need to each put our money in. We have U.S. Bank as a trustee that in effect creates a trust. And so that we both put our money in when and as required for the project. Then when it's appropriate to spend the money against a contractor's draw request, for example, the trustee will make sure that all the I's and T's have been dotted before that money is dispersed. Then we have a much more interesting document, which is the operating agreement. The operating agreement governs the operations of the stadium after it's been rebuilt for the next 25 years. Its term starts January 2011, and it continues for 25 years unless Peregrine defaults, which we don't expect. Peregrine can extend the term another 3 years only if Peregrine had to pay cost overrun dollars in connection with the initial construction. And again, this was part of the term sheet approved by the City Council. In effect, if they've got to write checks to cover cost overruns now, and we have no risk of that, they would get credit for those dollars in years 26, 27, and 28 against what they would otherwise be obligated to pay, and they would get the free use of the stadium until they've used up those credits. Peregrine has overall management responsibility for the stadium and all of its operations. The operating agreement requires that Peregrine in those operations meet certain performance standards, certain operational goals, and then a series of public goals. Some of those public goals include an approved comprehensive transportation management plan and the implementation of that plan, part of which is a study that can be updated periodically on encouraging people to use mass transit to come to events at the stadium. Part of that public goal is also a good neighbor agreement, which I mentioned. They have to allow high school football teams and amateur soccer teams to play in the stadium, scheduling permitted. They have to allow Special Olympics to occur there for free. They have to allow three community events that will occur at a reduced cost, basically their direct out-of-pocket costs, and they have to accommodate PSU football. In addition, Peregrine has agreed to contribute $50,000 per year for 5 years to the improvement of youth athletic fields within the city as determined by the city and the commissioner in charge of the, I believe it's parks. And that first payment is, by the way, occurring in 2010, even before the operating agreement goes into effect and before the stadium is complete. Peregrine also has to pay part-time seasonal employees a fair wage, and the city's fair wage policy, which is in City Charter Chapter 3.9, I'm sorry, City Code Chapter 3.99, will apply to these part-time seasonal workers, as it has in the case of the PG Park. And then during the course of operations, we haven't ignored Tanner Creek. There are now BES restrictions that are in the operating agreement that limit what they can do in the vicinity of Tanner Creek during their operations, such limitations as the total weight of vehicles and loading trucks and things like that that can be operating near Tanner Creek. Now, again, Peregrine has guaranteed us 7 years worth of the annual license fee and then the projected amount of city share of ticket revenue. We have projected out the city share of ticket revenue for 25 years and the license fee, which goes up at about 3% a year. So we have those 25-year charts. From years 8 through 25, Peregrine has prepaid those, so there's no risk of receiving those. For years 1 through 7, Peregrine and its owners, the Paulsons, have personally guaranteed those. There's virtually no risk of not getting them. Now, it could be that the number of attendees are greater at any given point in time than what we projected would be that drives the amount of projected city share of ticket revenue. That would create a surplus, and we get all of the surplus for any year, including the prepaid years and the guaranteed years, unless in the event that in one of those guaranteed years, the Paulsons have had to write a personal check to cover their obligation. Then if there is surplus in the future, we would split the surplus with them, 30 to us, 70 to them, until they recouped the guarantee check that they wrote. And after that, we would continue to receive 100% of the surplus. Financial oversight. The city has thorough financial oversight rights. Peregrine is required to submit numerous reports to us periodically, both financial reports and repair and maintenance reports, and we have the right to at any time examine their books and records as well as an audit right. The operating agreement prevents a transfer of the operating agreement itself to another entity without our consent. Peregrine is responsible for all maintenance. Peregrine is responsible for repair and replacement of certain parts of the stadium that are tied to the events themselves, such as the electronic video scoreboard, the electronic advertising signs, televisions and concourses, and signs that are associated with naming rights. The city bears the responsibility, however, for the stadium building itself and the turf in terms of the repair obligation. It's our structure, and so we are responsible for that. If the repair of the turf or the replacement of the turf occurs more frequently than every 8 years, however, Peregrine has to contribute 20% of the cost of that. And then finally, non-structural repairs.
Also, can I just clarify something? But if MLS mandates that there's grass, that cost would be borne by Peregrine.
That cost will be borne by Peregrine if MLS mandates grass.
And if there's a God, they will mandate grass.
Thank you. I don't want to enter into that debate. but yes, the cost will be covered. I mentioned earlier that the 1 through 7 years of revenue will be guaranteed, so we have a revenue guarantee agreement signed by Hank and Merritt Paulson. The total dollar amount that they've guaranteed under that is the sum of the 7 years' payments, which is $11.25 million. And there is no termination of that revenue guarantee agreement except for one thing: if we breach our obligations under the operating agreement or the redevelopment agreement. So, for example, if there are other things like casualties or anything like that, their revenue guarantee continues.
Did you say casualties?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Fire, you know, something like that. Then we have the exclusive use and guarantee agreement. And under this agreement, Peregrine and the Paulsons have personally guaranteed that the team will stay here for the 25-year period unless we consent otherwise. We control both a transfer of the franchise out of the entity Peregrine, and we control transfer of the ownership of Peregrine itself. And this is similar to what we have with respect to the Trailblazers in the Rose Garden. And the final document is the amended and restated Multnomah Club easement. To refresh your recollection, part of what we call the stadium is actually on land that's owned by the Multnomah Club. This is at the south end. And we have an easement from the Multnomah Club for the improvements that are currently there. But the soccer renovation will put a different kind of improvement there. They will put stands where there are not now stands. So we had to amend this MAC Club easement to give us the right to put other improvements there that we need for a completed Major League Soccer stadium.
Council, if Commissioner Leonard were to propose that we condemn that land rather than go the easement route, would there be any complication in your mind?
I'm sure you'd have 20,000 MAC Club members sending you letters. But the MAC Club has been helpful to us in accomplishing that. So I've given you a quick overview. There's a lot of detail, a lot of complexity, but I hope that that's been helpful to you and that those are the most important issues.
How many did you got?
Can we take some questions, Mayor?
Yeah, let's start with, we're going to rotate amongst folks, so let's start with Commissioner Fritz and then Commissioner Fish.
I'm just going page by page through the documents. So the first question is about the Portland State Football Agreement. It says that it's still subject to dispute resolution to determine the rental rate. Why have we not determined that now?
It's difficult to determine it for the course of 25 years. Portland State is pleased with this arrangement.
So with the first year or so is agreed upon?
Well, it's agreed upon between Peregrine and Portland State, and we've been assured by Portland State that they're comfortable with the arrangement.
Okay, great. Thank you. Somebody else want to?
Commissioner Fish?
I have a couple of questions. And Dave Logsdon, thanks for the time you spent walking, you and Ken walking through a number of these things. And the most important thing that you said during your meeting with me, what Ken said, was that he gave his unqualified support for the financial integrity of this deal, which from Ken is a very important thing to state and very important for this commissioner to hear, that he stood behind the financial aspects of this completely. But there were a couple of questions that we talked about privately I'd just like to air in this forum very briefly. And the first is, in light of the action which the council took a while ago to take the issue of the Urban Renewal District financing of any deal off the table, can you tell me whether there is any explicit or implicit part of this deal which conditions in the future a commitment on the part of the city to put Urban Renewal money into the deal?
Yes, Commissioner, there is no reference either in the documents themselves or in any discussions that occur between the city negotiating team and the Peregrine team having to do anything with future Urban Renewal districts that might be in the area of PG Park. It was not an item that was ever discussed.
Thank you. There's been some discussion outside of this process about what it means for the city to use its full faith and credit as a backstop so that we can assist a party in getting favorable terms on debt. Could you remind us of an example or two where the city has used its full faith and credit to secure financing in the ordinary course in something other than soccer?
Yes, and certainly Ken or Eric Johansson would be much more capable of this, but I know that the prior bonds that the city's issued for PG Park, for example, carry a general fund pledge. The bonds that the city's issued for the parking garage system carry a general fund pledge. I think Ken would say that it's a necessary tool that the city uses for these types of bonds because the market is not very receptive to a strictly revenue-based bond issue. They want to have a deep pocket behind those revenue bonds, and that is the general fund. But the way all these programs have been managed in the past and are currently, there has been no draw on the general fund, either for any prior spectator facility bond or for any parking bond that the city's issued.
And my understanding is we've used, for example, in the housing area, our full faith and credit in order to buy down an interest rate or other benefit.
We do get the benefit of better terms, better interest rates, lower coverage factors so that you can leverage a revenue stream more effectively through a bond sale.
Thank you.
Commissioner Saltzman.
This sounds like a great agreement. I just wanted to ask, make sure I understood, years 1 through 7, the licensing revenues and the ticket tax revenues are personally guaranteed.
That's correct.
Okay. And then years 8 through 25
are prepaid.
Prepaid. And out of that prepayment, we will cover our bonding. Is that?
No, the prepaid amount is part of Peregrine's $19.1 million of contribution. So they've got two sources. They've got about $8 million that is direct cash. The other amount is prepaying years 8 through 25. We will bond against the guaranteed revenues for years 1 through 7.
And those are personal?
Those guarantees. Are personally guaranteed by both Merritt and Hank Paulson.
And then, I'm very pleased about the language about the clinic serving Medicare, Medicaid, and Oregon Health Plan patients. I want to just make sure, and I don't know if Dave Unruh is going to testify, but
he will.
He will, okay. Then maybe I'll wait for him. My curiosity is I want to make sure that physicians groups are also covered by that. And I don't understand Providence well enough to know, but I do know often when I go see a doctor or a health clinic, I get bills from physicians groups, not Providence itself. I want to make sure that this restriction or mandate that they serve health, Medicaid, Medicare, and Oregon Health Plan applies to physicians groups as well.
Well, there will be a representative here from
Dave
Providence.
Dave will be coming up in a minute. Commissioner Fritz?
While we're on that topic, though, I understand that development agreement will come back to council. Given that other hospital institutions elsewhere in the city have not provided facilities recently that are ADA compliant, I'd like to see something in that development agreement to ensure that we don't have to rely on building inspectors to get ADA compliance. But going back to the redevelopment agreement about change orders, it seems to say that change orders may be approved without council approval if they are less than $100,000, which is still a lot of money. This is page 58. Is there a limit on the number of change orders that can be approved by the city's construction manager?
No, there is not.
And can a city change be approved without council approval, thereby increasing the cost of the project?
It could increase the cost of the project if the city approves it, but remember, that becomes a cost overrun that is then paid by Peregrine. And Commissioner Fritz...
There's no sneaky way.
No. I would point out to you that this is a mechanism that we've used both in the Rose Garden and we used in PG Park. The issue is change orders come up and you have to act quickly. And so we have this dividing line between what's a small enough one that we need to move quickly on and it's not such that you need to take a whole lot of time. And this is what we've done before. But because if there is a cost increase, it's a cost overrun and Peregrine pays.
Gotcha, thank you. And then it's page 77, it says revenues from the stadium bonds may be used for purposes other than the project. Like what?
Well, that's to give the city flexibility. It really is simply that if Office of Management and Finance says, okay, we've got to sell bonds for $11.9 million for this project, but the city council has authorized us to do something else, and we want to put that something else in the same bond offering. So it's entirely a pro-city provision that gives us that flexibility. And it's up to you whether you want to use that or not.
But that cannot be done without council approval.
Cannot be done without council approval.
Okay. Then moving to the operating agreement on page 15, I was under the understanding that the money for athletic fields, the $50,000, was without strings, but the language requires mutual agreement of Peregrine and the city.
That was in the term sheet, as I recall, and the mutual agreement is not over whether the money is going to be given. but where it's going to be used.
Well, that my understanding was that the Commissioner of Parks would be deciding that.
Well, on behalf of the city, and I think the Commissioner of Parks has a question on this.
Would you like me, Mayor, to raise it now? Or?
Sure.
I've had some fruitful conversations with Mr. Paulson, and I will simply state by way of legislative history that it is our mutual intent to use the $50,000 a year to help, as the agreement says, improve or build youth athletic fields. And that would be to maximize the impact of any contribution by taking the entire amount and putting it into a field in an underserved part of the city. As I've expressed to Mr. Paulson, after talking to my colleagues, it is a sense of this council, the first recipient would be Park Rose High School, which is park deficient, and we would use that as a way to leverage some other monies to help them build out a soccer field.
In future years, you have to negotiate with Peregrine on how to use that $50,000?
I've asked Commissioner Leonard to handle the lead negotiation on that.
Yes,
I'm quite confident that Mr. Paulson and I will not have to use the default model of going to arbitration. He and I have had a lengthy conversation about the intent of this language and the benefit which we expect to bring to underserved parts of the city where a soccer field would be welcomed, and I'm quite confident we'll be able to come to an agreement.
Okay, thank you. Then on structural repairs, the staff indicated that the city pays for structural repairs, including the roof, but it says that Peregrine will actually perform the repairs. Does this mean that the repair work will not have to go through the open bidding process?
If the repair work otherwise meets the requirements for public bidding, it would have to go through that process.
Okay. And then on to fair wages. My understanding was if the workers decide to unionize, that Peregrine would be subject for paying the full wages owed. I'm not sure that the section that relates to that, it looks to me like the city might have to continue paying the same subsidy as prior to unionization. Could
that
you
is
clarify
correct.
That?
That is correct.
The city would continue to subsidize even if this
that is correct.
Is unionized.
And after consideration of this issue, having time to mull this over, it made no sense to me that if the employees choose to unionize, that why we would, you know, why there would be a financial penalty for that. That didn't make any sense to me. It's their choice.
But the point of unionizing is so that you can negotiate directly with your employer rather than expecting the citywide taxpayers to subsidize your.
That didn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to say that there'll be a penalty if they choose, there'll be a city penalty if they choose to unionize, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, then further on the labor agreement, and I want to hear from the labor folks who are here with your opinions on that. It says that a single employee may request an on-site meeting without management, and it limits that opportunity to the first operating year. So what's to stop somebody saying in the first week, I want to have a meeting, and nobody comes, and that's it?
Well, that opportunity exists in the redevelopment agreement, number one. So the employees, when they want to during the construction period, could have that meeting. The second is that when the employees want to meet, presumably they would want to do that early in the term of the operating agreement to establish whether or not they want to organize. And so the compromise was to say, this can't go on forever. Let's have it out, so to speak, decide whether it's going to be unionized within the first year of the operating agreement.
And we'll have members of organized labor up here to testify in a minute. And obviously, the rules of the state and federal rules would apply forever.
Correct. And the document also, Commissioner Fritz, requires that on the subject of labor organization, Peregrine will remain neutral.
Okay, thank you. I just have two more. On the standards for approval of naming rights, it seems to read that as long as the name is not on one of the prohibited categories, we wouldn't get to say whether we want it to be Goldman Sachs or Enron or whatever else it might want to be.
What section is that, please?
It's on page 56 of the operating agreement, line 20.
Well, they have to meet all the limitations in Section 9.3 and the provisions of Section 9.4. And so we're not, under this agreement, in a position where we can sort of dictate to them, we just don't like this person or this company. And that would too severely limit their ability to market the names. So what we did was we erected barriers that say that this is off limits. And this is very comparable to the naming rights provision that is in the Rose Garden documents as well as the original PG Park documents.
Right.
And I would say that it's incumbent on them to, in order to have a successful venue, to choose a naming rights partner that is going to attract fans, not repel them.
Well, and this, I'm sure that that's a sound business practice. So
I would also, Commissioner, point out to you in the beginning of Section 9.2 that we have to also approve the form of the naming rights agreement as well as the name, and that's subject to the city's approval.
There was an interesting suggestion in testimony this morning to whatever the name is chosen to tack on Firefighters Memorial Stadium. And I just remember that was just one example of something that might elevate and contribute to Portland's civic pride. I remember when we changed from Civic Stadium to PG Park that a lot of people were really, they missed the name because it gave them an attachment rather than to a corporation. So just put that in. So my final question is, it seems like we have the ability to say no to advertising tobacco products anywhere in the park. Why would we not just do that?
A couple of things. Tobacco cannot be associated with the name of the stadium, obviously. We're talking now about what are, in effect, advertising rights, sponsorships within the stadium itself. We may not like the fact, but a lot of sponsors in that industry do sponsor sporting events. And there are also some series of events or concerts that are sponsored by people that sell those products. And so that's why we have allowed in the PG Park deal and in this deal the opportunity to have tobacco-associated companies within the walls of the stadium. You can disagree with that. That's your prerogative, but that's what the document currently is negotiated to say.
What I heard was this is going to be a family-friendly environment, so having tobacco advertising is not conducive to that. Thank you.
All right, any other questions?
Yeah. Mr. Janik, you probably know more about the Spectator Facility Fund than anyone alive. So
No. Dave Logsdon, Eric Johansson, and Ken Russ know more.
Okay. You're one of four people who knows more about this than anyone alive.
Whether I want to or not, and, right?
But I will tell you that there's some confusion about the Spectator Facility Fund in the broader public and how it operates. And I think this is a useful forum just to clear one thing up. We've spent a lot of time making sure, as part of this deal, that the taxpayers are protected, the taxpayers of Portland, and the risk that they incur is protected. The team has spent a fair amount of time making sure that there are no general fund dollars that are put into this deal. And we've drawn a clear line about no urban renewal funds going into this. So that's sort of like front door and back door of how a taxpayer looking at this might be concerned about exposure. But the issue that sometimes comes up with people around Spectator Facility Fund is that you're taking part of that revenue stream and you're dedicating it to a bond. And therefore, there's a lost opportunity cost that you could use that money for something else. And the next point that some people offer is like, then let's pick a compelling social need, fix, you know, help our schools, build out the parks and whatever. And I think it's useful for you to help us understand what are the restrictions on what we can do with that revenue stream.
I'd like Dave to join in, but it is my understanding that as a matter of legal authority, the Spectator Facility Fund was set up so that it could not be used for those kinds of purposes.
And that would be both in its the legal documents that establish it and presumably also in bond covenants?
That's correct.
So that while maybe in a different scenario, it would be wonderful if that money could actually be used to backfill general fund or to go into other worthy social purposes, the reality is these dollars are not fungible. They have to stay within a set of uses which are spectator facility related.
You're correct, Commissioner. And if you were to change that, it is not within your current power to do so because you've sold bonds with the promise that these spectator facility funds would only go towards certain purposes, so the bondholders would have to approve.
So to make sure even I understand this, if someone were to say there's a lost opportunity cost in putting this money into bonds for PG Park, the answer is, well, it could go into bonds or financing for another facility, Memorial Coliseum, a baseball stadium, I see someone in the back, but not for something unrelated to those kinds of uses.
That's correct.
But it could be used for, say, Lent's Little League Baseball, as long as you're watching sports. It doesn't have to be commercial sports.
No.
I think it's limited to the facilities that are supported by the bonds that were issued for the improvements. And I think other thing I would add is that we're also stewards of those assets. You know, the Memorial Coliseum, the parking garages, the plaza, PGE Park, they are all large facilities that over time require investment by the owner. And so part of the long-term strategy for the fund is to, you know, maintain our assets within the fund so that in the future, if it's needed, we have the capability to keep the buildings up. If not, then we would probably need to come to the City Council asking for general fund money to keep the buildings up. So by us retaining funds within the fund, we can deal with those facility issues over the long term.
We are choosing under this agreement to dedicate $11.9 million of spectator funds and then $24 million including debt service, to this particular project. We could choose to dedicate it to something else within the spectator facilities.
That would be possible to do.
Within the spectator facilities.
Yeah.
And I think that I just wanted to clarify that, Mr. Janik, because I was slow to the realization of that myself, and I think a lot of people think those dollars are fungible. And so
right.
I wanted to clarify that. And my last question goes to you.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I don't want that to go unresponded to. I mean, I don't think you can assume that you could dedicate $11.4 million to something else if you don't have the original revenue stream that generated the $11.4 million from which you gather the money to spend on something else from in the first place. So that does not make sense. I mean, so I would say the answer is no. We can't spend it on something else because we have to have MLS and the deal we have to have the $11.4 million to spend. So,
well, Randy, but I'm not picking a fight on this, but and you and I are in agreement on this point, but I'm responding to some emails I've received that have posed the different scenario, which is if the parking revenue and the tax receipts on Blazer games and other things produced an additional windfall.
Yes.
Which we're now dedicating in addition to back up these bonds or to pay off these bonds, is there an alternative use to which we could put this money outside of spectators and facility fund? And the answer is no, because some people have suggested that we use the money for something like our parks or our schools
right.
or other purposes. And I just wanted to make clear that we're severely limited in how those dollars can be spent.
Well, I was actually not responding to your point, right? Because I agree with that. Commissioner Fritz suggested we could make a choice to spend the $11.4 million on some other project, and the agreement was yes, we could, and I'm just simply pointing out the $11.4 million wouldn't exist if we didn't have this deal. So I think it's a stretch to somehow suggest it could be spent.
I would be very appreciative of next week is to find the numbers for how much money in the spectator fund comes from the Rose Garden, how much from Memorial Coliseum, how much is predicted to come from the Major League Soccer.
And we provided.
Thank you.
So reclaiming my time, I just want to ask one other question. And literally, I'm trying to make sure that the basic points are understood. And I have a rule of thumb. If I understand it, then I assume other people understand it. There's been some questions raised, Dave, about the sequencing on the financing, the decision to go with a line of credit first, followed by bonds. Could you just again explain why that approach has been chosen?
Okay, and it is a very common approach to funding projects, is that you finance the construction with a letter of credit. Following construction, once you know what all the final costs are, then you take out that letter of credit financing with long-term bonds. That is the strategy that we used for the Rose Quarter project. We used it in phase one for PGE Park. It's a very common financing practice in the private sector for construction projects. And in this way, you have finality about the project. And you know what the final costs are. So when you enter into that long-term permanent financing, you have all the facts you need to do that.
And is there any risk associated with that other than the fact that interest rates could change dramatically in the interim?
I suppose there is a little interest rate risk, and Eric would be better to speak to this, between, you know, if you sold bonds today versus 2 years from now, is the market up or down by then? Other than that, I don't think lines of credit carry much financial risk.
Thank you.
So I just want to be clear. It's spectator facilities and the fund created to build them and manage them. It is the spectators and the parking revenues and the taxes and whatever other miscellaneous income from spectators attending City Spectator facilities. That is what is being used for PG Park, and by the way in which it was created, can only be used for spectator facility-related expenses.
That's correct.
All right, any other questions? All right, our next panel will be our the team from Peregrine coming up. Good afternoon. Welcome back.
Good afternoon. Mayor Paulson. Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, thank you. I'm pleased to join you on what is a historic and exciting day, the opportunity to bring Major League Soccer to Portland. I urge you to support this plan for the following reasons. Number one, it will put people back to work at a time when jobs are needed most. Number two, it will add a second Major League team to our city, further showcasing Portland to the nation and the world. Number three, it will transform PG Park into an even better venue, not just for soccer, but for Portland State football, high school sports, and hundreds of community events held there each year. Number four, it protects taxpayers from risk through a unique partnership of private investment and guarantees from my family and no use of city general fund revenues. Number five, it brings the excitement of MLS to Soccer City, USA. Over 16,000 fans a game attending over 20 events a year in a new PGE Park, which will bring new energy, new people, more fun, and more business to downtown. Number six, it strengthens the already strong relationship between the Timbers and community organizations throughout the Portland area. Number seven, in partnership with Providence Health Systems, it creates a pioneering sports rehabilitation clinic at PGE Park, a clinic open to everybody that will be accessible to nearby residents and people who cannot afford basic medical care. Number eight, it is a plan that has been designed in the light of day, with nearly a year of public input, scrutiny, and debate. And finally, number nine, bringing MLS to Portland will pull people together and improve the quality of life that makes Portland and Oregon such a special place to live. It is for all of these and more reasons and more that I urge you to give the final approval to this plan. Now, I also want to address the future of the Portland Beavers, because I know it is on the mind of our fans and many in the community. The Beavers will play the upcoming season at PG Park, and my goal has been and still is to keep the Beavers in Portland or the Portland area for years to come. I believe strongly that family-friendly, affordable AAA baseball is a good thing for this region and state. I'm reminded of this every time I visit with fans and families in the stands, young and old, who support the team. So far, we have advanced three good but unsuccessful plans to build a new home for the Beavers: Memorial Coliseum, Lentz Park, and Beaverton. All three included significant financial commitments and guarantees from my family for stadium construction and operation. Having said that, I remain hopeful that either in Portland or elsewhere in the region, we can find the same spirit for building an intimate new stadium for Beavers baseball, concerts, and youth sports and community events that we have displayed here in making MLS a reality at PG Park. When it comes to the future of the Beavers, I'm a willing and eager partner, a willing financial partner, business partner, and community partner. But to succeed, I also need a willing and eager government partner. On a personal note, I would like to thank the city's professional staff and each of you, Mayor Adams and Commissioner Randy Leonard, in particular, for the leadership you have shown in helping make this MLS dream a reality. Throughout this process, I hope you have learned as much about the business of professional sports as I have learned about City Hall and local politics. Mostly, I know that Portland is better off for what we have accomplished together, and that the fans and the constituents we all work for and serve are the real winners here today. Which brings me to my final comment. A sincere and heartfelt thank you to soccer fans, Timbers fans, and the Timbers Army in particular. We simply would not be here without you today. You are the reason this is all happening. Thank you. And George Messina is going to make some remarks as well about the construction process, but I'm going to just at the outset address a point Commissioner Fritz raised. I can assure you and put whatever language you want in our documentation that we're not doing any tobacco-oriented deals at the facility.
Thank you.
Does that mean you'll vote for it now?
Second.
That was my question, too.
Please tell us who you are for the record.
George Messina. I'm with Icon Venue Group. I am the owner's representative.